The following interview is part of the American Phytopathological Society Centennial Oral History Project. In this interview, Jose Amador and Tom Zitter discuss the role of extension plant pathologists, as well as the past, present, and future of extension and applied research in plant pathology. Jose Amador is the former director of the Texas A&M Agricultural Research and Extension Center in Weslaco, Texas. During his career, he focused his efforts on extension and research on disease control in vegetables, citrus, field crops, and sugarcane, and the development of efficient and economic plant disease control practices. Dr. Amador was interviewed by Tom Zitter, a professor in the Department of Plant Pathology and Plant Microbiology at Cornell University. Dr. Zitter's work has focused on extension and research in the area of epidemiology and the management of diseases of fresh market vegetable crops. This interview was recorded in Quebec City, Canada, July 2006.
Well, Jose, I think the audience would be interested in hearing about your career in extension. I know you've been 100% extension appointment, so could you fill us in on your career?
Well, I was one of the fortunate guys, Tom, that I don't think that happens anymore. I had a job about 5 months before I finished my degree. There was a position open at Texas A&M. I applied for it, and I went for the interview, and the people liked what they saw, and they offered me the job with the condition that I finished my degree, which, of course, I was planning on doing that. So about 4 or 5 months before I finished, I already had a job, which is not very common nowadays. Also, at those times, there was not so much emphasis on postdocs or things like that. So I got out of LSU, where I got my degree, and went down to Weslaco, which is where I was stationed, and went out working, you know, right away as an extension plant pathologist covering all of South Texas. And at that time, there were only 3 of us to have the whole state. We had one guy up north, we had got one fellow in College Station, and I was in the south, and between the 3 of us, we covered the whole state.
So your appointment was 100% extension?
100% extension. That was my main responsibility. And very, very focused on helping the farmers and the county agents. As a matter of fact, the director at that time of the extension service and the guy who gave me the job, he said, you know, your number one responsibility is to make the county agent happy. If I hear complaints about you that come from producers or come from farmers, that may not be so important, but if a county agent complains about the work that you're doing, then you'll be in trouble. So it was totally service to the people through the county extension office.
So you indicated to me that even though you were 100% extension, you had equal standing with other faculty on the main campus.
Very much so. Even though I was at a branch station or an off-campus station as a call, I was a full member of the Department of Plant Pathology at College Station, and so were the other 2 guys. Later on, we got to be about 11, 12, I think we got to be about 13 of it. But the extension was always very much part of the Department of Plant Pathology at Texas A&M. So I felt on an equal basis with them. And I think the salaries and all the other stuff was pretty much competitive with the other ones.
So you were saying that applied research and extension and teaching are all important components. And isn't that truly the basis of a land-grant mission?
And that's what it's all about, you know, the 3 missions of the land-grant colleges, teaching, research, and extension. And I think that we had a division that some people specialize in teaching, some people specialize in research, and some people specialize in extension. At Texas A&M, extension was a very important component, and we felt that, you know, we needed to devote the whole time to it.
One of the things that developed during my career was the ability to mix extension and applied research. And we saw extension as a means of actually developing and then extending that information that we generated ourselves. What was your basis?
It was the same. I think that we all experienced that. We could not get all the answers that we needed from the research people, not because they were not capable of generating, but there was not a certain thing was too specific that the researcher would not do, and we had to do our own. So I say that probably all the extension people always will have, you know, a sort of a applied research program going on the side. You know, result demonstration was a big, big thing during my career. I would have, 8, 10, 12, 15 of them every year. And sometime I combine my result demonstration with that of the county agent. Each county agent's responsibility was to have, you know, result demonstration in the county. So I help them do that, and we do it together. So I always felt that basic research was very, very important to get the answers, but that applied research needed to go hand in hand with it to provide the answer that farmers needed very, very quickly. So, yeah, we all had a basic understanding of what's going on in science, but we were doing our applied work just as well.
Well, you know, you and I both know that there's been some dramatic changes. There's been many centers that have been dissolved or combined with others, and so there's been a net reduction not only in the centers but also personnel to service agriculture as we know it. But yet electronic technology has come along, and that's been a very good thing in terms of extending our information to the public. Can you share some information on that?
Yeah, and that's happening, and it's a good thing that is happening, because all these electronic things can save you so much time in travel and mailing specimens that they come in decomposed. So you see more and more places, like North Carolina State, for example, they got an excellent video type imaging program that people can send the pictures to the diagnostic lab, and they get a diagnosis just as good as they have brought the specimen themselves. So yeah, all this new technology is making the job easier and also more efficient. Unfortunately, because of resources constraint, there being less and less people that available to that kind of work. And this is one of the things that we're seeing in some places, that the resource people to do the work are not as available as they were at one time. Like I say, at one time we got to be about 11, 12. I forgot the number of extension plant pathologists. It's a lot less than that now.
Sure.
My position at Westlaco, when I moved into administration, it was replaced one time. And when that person resigned to go to the main campus, it was replaced a second time, but now it's empty. So that's not an extension plant pathologist at Westlaco Center anymore. Not criticizing anybody, that's just a fact of life.
Fact of life, yes. You and I have both been members of APS for our entire
career.
Longer than
we want to admit.
That's true, Jose. But I want to have you share with the audience today what that association with our society has meant to you professionally and even as a person.
I don't think I could have been the kind of a plant pathologist that I was if I was not involved, you know, in APS. You have so many opportunities, not only to serve the society, but to benefit yourself from serving the societies. I've been a member of the International Committee. I've been a member of the Plant Pathology Extension Committee. I've been a member of so many different committees. And, you know, just coming to the meetings, you're interacting with the other plant pathologists, brings so much more into your professionalism that if you were not, you know, doing that. And APS offered you the opportunity to contact all these people. I mean, just think of yourself being off-campus center and not having anybody to interact with. APS gives you that opportunity. Plus, all the resources that APS offered you. I mean, heaven knows how many slides, you know, I got them from APS, how many CDs now, books, and everything else. It's been a very, very rewarding experience. And here I am, 42 years after started working as a plant pathologist, and I'm still very active in APS. I'm a member of the foundation board, which is, to me, is a great way to be helping a student to become familiar with APS and for them to have, hopefully, the same experience that I have as a young plant pathologist.
Right.
And we have the opportunity to attend the division meetings if we cannot go to the main meeting, and also opportunity to go to the national meeting if we can. And I just cannot visualize a professional plant pathologist if he's not involved, you know, in the activity of his main society.
Agreed.
It's just natural.
Well, that's a good mission message to give to students that. Even though we have training at a land-grant school, I personally started out in botany and knew I didn't want to become a taxonomist. But then, fortunately, the department I was in was also plant pathology, and therefore I could utilize the information I gained on crop production but integrate that with plant pathology. So could you share with us some of your aspects in terms of what this has mean for graduate education, and that it's one of the most enthusiastic and exciting areas and fields that of endeavor that we have enjoyed for many years?
What I would like to tell the young students that I may be watching what you and I are talking about is that you and I were talking about the Extension Survey the way it was 40 years ago. I mean,
right.
I go back 41 years. But really, Extension is not just an institution that is molded in one way. You know, anybody can do Extension. You know, you can be a basic scientist and you can do Extension, mm-hmm. and you can go out and explain to people what things are and how things happen. And if you have a passion, you know, to communicate to people, whether it be practical information, whether it be semi-practical information, whether it be basic information, if you can translate that into something that the public can understand, you're an Extension person. It doesn't make any difference whether you have 100% appointment or 50% appointment or 25% appointment. I don't think there's very many 100% appointment Extension left anymore. Most people being asked to do maybe 50-50, 75-25, or the reverse, 75 Extension, 25. And it's only right that it's that way because, you know, I never felt that I was, even though my position was 100% Extension, I was paid, you know, from the Extension budget, I always felt, like we said at the beginning, that I was doing applied research.
Right.
And I think that, you know, people who do applied research, they can communicate, you know, that information to the public. But the guy who's doing basic research, he can also do the same thing. And being asked to do that more and more because the public doesn't care with the information that he's getting coming for Extension, coming for research, coming for where. He just wants the information. And if you can get the good information and the information that they need, it doesn't matter.
Well, that raises an interesting point. And I think it's the hallmark of a land-grant system is that we have been able to develop unbiased and not only unbiased, but free services available to the industry. Could you share some of that with us in terms of your career?
I think it's a key factor in how people view this information. Salespeople are salespeople, but you know, when you get information for somebody who's selling something, you always kind of say, well, am I giving the whole information and everything else? And I'm not saying that's wrong, you know, but that's just kind of a natural way that people react. When the information comes from somebody that you know has no strings attached, it's a little bit different. So, yeah, I think that we were fortunate in being trusted by the public in a very special way. However, I have to say that just because you work for an Extension, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to believe everything you said. Your information better be good.
Right.
Because if it's not good, it doesn't make any difference. And like I say, you know, with the transition from Extension-type people to consultant-type people, the people who pay for the information, they don't care. They just want good information. That's the key factor, no matter, you know, where it comes from. It has to be good, solid information. And as long as the people in the land-grant college can provide that kind of information, you know, we have no problem.
You and I are both aware of the situation at our universities today that students love to specialize in a particular pathogen and even on a particular crop. But we know that's unrealistic, at least when it comes to Extension. We have to be everything to everybody. Right. And how do you see that playing out in terms of the graduate education and success within a career in plant pathology?
For one thing, when I started out, I was an Extension plant pathologist for all crops, for all diseases, for everything that came out that were not even was disease, like in the case of the white grub that we mentioned. We needed to be with our eyes open looking for things. So it's very hard for you to become specialized in just one thing, like you said, when you are there. Looking or trying to help the farmer with problems. I can relate to, or I could probably count 15 things mm-hmm. in my professional career that became problems that had not been a problem when I first started out.
Could you share some of those with us?
Well, the first one was already there, but it was brand new. It was the reniform nematode in cotton. And I came to my job. I started working July 1st. and I came right into the middle of it. A big problem with reniform nematode and cotton. And I play a role by identifying it, by going out, taking samples, you know, and quantizing what the problem was. And then I can think on the downy mildew grain sorghum that came out, you know, in the early 60s. Several people, Texas A&M, got involved in that thing. More recently, sorghum ergot was a disease that was first found right there in the valley coming in from Mexico. I can think in sugarcane smut, like I say, that was not in the state, and it came in also from the south. Sugarcane rust, we did not have to, didn't used to have that, and developed as an epidemic in the Caribbean, put several varieties out of business that had to be taken out of the growing because they were so susceptible to it, and finally ended up also in the valley. In citrus, everybody's hearing about tristeza, and everybody's hearing about greening and all those diseases that we don't have, but eventually I'm pretty sure we're going to have. I said we don't have, qualify, we don't have the difficult or the more severe strain, but so how can you specialize in any one thing, Tom, when you got new things? I mean, you probably had the same experience.
We had the same experience. That's
right. Well, what were some of the ones that you...
Well, in Florida, it seemed like you had to go every 10 years, and you should go back and examine what the virus picture was in winter vegetable crops, because it seemed like over that period or span of time, invariably you were going to discover new viruses that you hadn't even known about before, either through mutation or through introduction, like you said, some of the diseases coming from the south. So it's almost like we have to keep on our toes, because it is not a stagnant thing, and I think that's what is so exciting to get across to students, that they may be working on one problem this year or for the next 2 or 3 years, but they can easily and very dramatically have to shift gears and work on something else from there on out, because it's an ever-changing situation in agriculture, and not just in the United States, but globally.
Some of the diseases are brand new that we never had before. Some are diseases that we had, but we had it in a very small scale that were not important. And then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, they become epidemic. I can think of the southern corn leaf blight. We had that problem, but because of the way that we're breeding our corn, right, and the male sterility factor, yeah, all of a sudden, I think, got to be a tremendous, tremendous epidemic in the United States. And it was good that plant pathologists were ready to make suggestions, and the thing was reversing in 2 or 3 years. We were out of the problem. But then other things come up. So it's an exciting word. I mean, it's really, really exciting. And you see that not only in the United States, but you see it in the countries that you travel. The same thing happening all the time. And the same thing happening in a parallel way with the weeds that become infestation. We see that with insects all the time. They're moving from other places. So, yeah, you don't like changes. This is not the place for you to be.
Would you agree with me, too, that our society has played a great role in terms of dealing with these new and emerging diseases as they occur?
It cannot be denied, of course, to me and to you, probably so obvious that we don't even have to talk about it, but the APS, American Phytopathological Society, is always being at the forefront on trying to identify some of these emerging problems that we're calling emerging diseases and try to get people ready to see what they're going to do and how we're going to deal with them once they become established. And it's not only with diseases. I mean, for example, I can think of APS right now being very involved in this problem that we have with homeland security, trying to forecast what some of the problems that we could have if certain disease pathogens are introduced into the United States. And we are already dealing and trying to react to that thing. So hope it never happens, but when it does happen, the society would have played a role in alerting the people and trying to get some kind of a plan in place on how to deal with it. So, yeah, I think the society is being very, very proactive in trying to stay on top of things that could very seriously affect the economy, not only of an individual farmer or individual county or individual state, but also, you know, the whole country.
Well, Jose, I really appreciate your spending some time with me today to discuss your career, our careers, actually, in terms of extension plant pathology and what it's meant to you and to me. and how we can hopefully share this with our colleagues now and in the future.
Well, you're quite welcome in thanking me, but actually I need to thank, the Society for APS for affording me the opportunity to do it. I need to thank the land-grant system for allowing me to become what I became as a plant pathologist. And more than anything else, I'd like to thank the profession of plant pathology that allowed me to do something that to me has been so rewarding. I mean, like I say, and I keep saying to everybody, it's been a tremendous experience that I had. And there's no way that a person can describe how good you feel when you do something that you really have a passion for and they really like. And I've been blessed that I've been able to do that as a plant pathologist, as an extension plant pathologist, as a member of the society that I represent, as a member of the Land Grant College, and as a member of the general community, you know, the farming community. It's a great thing. I only hope that things continue to be as good and that the new generation take an interest in serving the public. And that's what the whole thing is all about. To me, that's what it all was, service. If we can serve the people, the rewards are just immeasurable.